I've watched so far. I don't remember a single question about housing. And we cannot let housing wither on the vine at the federal level, because most of the issues we're talking about are federal issues. They're national concerns. So I very much appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, now I do have a comment on that. Now, there's a lot of veterans out there that are homeless. You know, I mean, where would we be today if it wasn't for those veterans fighting for our country?
Why isn't
the federal government helping out with that?
Well, as Mr. Fish said, we got to give the Veterans Administration credit. I got a call a year ago from the HUD secretary saying, and from the Veterans Administration saying, would the city of Portland sign up to get all of our homeless veterans inside? And so we partnered with Multnomah County and our housing authority, Home Forward, as well as with the city of Gresham and some nonprofits, and we did make that commitment. And we started out this year with 690 homeless veterans, and we're down to about 230, and our goal is to get them all inside by the end of the year. And that wouldn't happen if it weren't for the Veterans Administration, as Commissioner Fish said, stepping up and giving us vouchers. We're housing two a day with vouchers. And there are some very responsible local landlords who need to be praised, because in this superheated real estate market, they are reserving units for this program, because Chair Kafoury and I have been calling them, and along with Commissioner Saltzman, asking them to reserve units. So that's a success story, but it's an exception, because the rest of the federal government, under the control of Congress, as it now stands, is not supporting housing. But the Veterans Administration here in Portland and nationally needs to be praised, because they are making a really good thing happen. So
that's great.
With an assist for Sally Erickson.
Because
a broken system until the Ending Homelessness team at the Housing Bureau sat down with the VA, sat down with the nonprofit providers, and fixed the structural problem with the VASH vouchers program. And that actually opened the door to us becoming eligible for more vouchers. So a lot of good people worked on that.
What about people that are in recovery and in treatment programs?
They qualify for
reasonable accommodations under the Federal Fair Housing Act, and people that have a criminal past or don't meet the income requirements.
Yeah, that's right.
Denied housing all the time. You know, and if they're not made aware that they do qualify for a reasonable accommodation, for them to overlook their past, for them to overlook their criminal or their poor credit or their income requirements, they wind up out in the street, and then they wind up relapsing, and it's a vicious circle.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome. Just slide that, pull that microphone down a little bit. There you go. There you go. You got it.
Thank you. And thank you for hearing me today. I hope I can get my message out.
Just give us your name for the record.
My name is Linda Lloyd, and I'm here representing an area I haven't heard you talk about yet, the mobile home parks. An investor from Emin Enterprise bought our mobile home 2 years ago. I'm paying 90% of my income for rent today. I bought a mobile home because I like the community. The TriMet was going to be having Max through. We thought we'd be going to museums and things you dream about doing in retirement. But my retirement has been fighting a no-cause eviction. Thank God for legal aid. And I was shocked when, I'm going to quick give you all of it. It started with phone calls saying your house is for sale. Then you got a creditor calling you. Why? And then you get an eviction. And when that don't work, I get chased on my land that I'm paying for and screamed at. And I'm a kindergarten teacher. I'm trying to walk away. You're not going to communicate? I'll give you time to calm down. I believe in communication. Plurinvest Management runs our park. There is no management. There are no rules in force. I put photos online if anybody cares. The health department would probably close us up. Those of us have lived there over 10 years. It's a wonderful community. We're being priced out, and I want to know why the law you passed to protect us is not working. They're to buy us out, not scare you out, not to threaten you out, not to harass you out. And sure as hell, not to evict you for no reason. I'm sorry, I cuss. I'm really at my wit's end. I've tried everything educationally I know possible, but I see your system failing. I see hope through you, and I hope I can take this hope back to everybody in our complex. I wrote a letter asking for help. What I see is the ex-cons are getting a place to live in our park, and we welcome everybody. I've seen them improve their lives, and I've seen them say, I'm not paying this kind of rent. They leave. We're in a mobile home. We're stuck. Now the rent is going to be $610, I believe, a month. I live on Milwaukee, on McLaughlin, next to the Sex Predator Motel, which is why the property value was down. I don't mind the halfway houses. I don't mind the improvement programs. But don't increase my rent when I've sacrificed my safety, which I got to give credit today to the sheriff department that has been doing drive-throughs because we are not sleeping. Seniors are not taking medication. They're not doing diabetes testing. They're going without. I'm proof you can eat one meal a week and make it. People are going without, and we're in the United States of America. We send relief overseas. I taught my children to believe they could be anything. But I thought I was a great teacher, and I'm sitting here before you with a hopeless cause. I went to Salem 2 weeks ago with the Mobile Home Commission. They're worried about putting these meters in. I understand improvements, new parks, but the mom and pops are being pushed out. Our landlord, God bless him, he'd give us a $20 increase with the letter Y. We're increasing it. When he gave us an increase to $422, nobody complained. It's a hardship, but $422, half our income, we're willing to pay because we could see it. But now we got an investor. First thing they do, take the table out of the laundry room. So you, the senior that carried it over there, you don't have a place to set it, to fold it. You carry it in, you got to physically get it out. They put in candy machines that nobody puts money in.
Ma'am, I need you to wrap up your...
And security systems that are no protection to our home. You passed a law to protect us, to be bought out. Can you help us somehow?
Thank you. No, that's why we're here. We haven't passed the law yet, but that's why we're here today.
You did pass a law. That said, mobile homes, if an investor came in the park, had to buy it.
That's a state law, but we helped get it passed. But we shouldn't take credit for that. We just supported it. But you have a legal aid attorney now?
Well, they're busy saving evictions, so the harassment, I'm on my own the last year. And
the problem, ma'am, the problem is investors are buying up mobile home parks because of the dirt, not the homes. And unless Oregon strengthens existing protections, they are going to continue to be, and we have a number of them in our community that are vitally important as affordable homes, but they're being bought up for the dirt and with an eye towards long-term development, and we don't have adequate protections for people in mobile homes right now.
They are slumlord with drug lord tactics. I grew up out of the projects thinking my life would be better, and I'm back here fighting for the same thing my mother did. But I have faith in all of you.
May I suggest you stop downstairs in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement? They can help find your state representative, and I think that might be the person who would help you.
Yeah, downstairs in that corner.
They're here today.
They're still here.
They're always here. Yes. Well, you can always call 823-4000 to find out where to get help.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, let's take some more testimony, please.
The next three are Tyler Morris, Lauren Gross, and Mariah Ellen Clare. And they will be followed by Mitchell White, Francis Campy, and I believe the last name is Carr or Kerr on Southeast 80th.
Okay. Did you get called? Come on up if you did. All right, go ahead, please. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Mariah Ellen Clare. The reason why I wanted to come down today is because I'm represent one of the first wave tenants that are getting priced out due to the rent hikes. My rent went up, well, it's going to go up at the end of my lease, 40%, a $400 increase, which is totally shocking. And I used to be a landlord here in the state of Oregon. And the gentleman that left that was so kind was the type of landlord that used to exist here across the board. So when I started getting wind of this new contagion of rent hikes, I was totally shocked because I've been here. I'm a native, and I've never seen it like this before. It's just totally shocking. And so it seems to me it's so inhumane to push people out, seniors and people with disabilities and just everybody cranking it up for people who have families and that kind of thing. I've been talking to people almost daily, and I've heard $700 a month increases. So we really do need, it sounds like, the law changed. If the law isn't serving us and we seem to be serving it, then there's something wrong here. And I'm all about change. And I know that we can do better than this. I would like to see the humanity put back into the rental market, where we're dealing with people's lives. And I know Portland is a good city, and we do care about people. But we have to go the extra step and change the law. So if that means us going down to the state, then that's what we need to do. And so I want to see temporarily for people. I'm working with some ladies who are like right hanging over the cliff, about to be homeless in just a few weeks. So I want to see some emergency housing for people, and renters want to be at the discussion table, not be talked about, but we want to do some of the problem solving here with you all, and there's some really great ideas. And we want the Section 8 rules to be adjusted so people don't lose their Section 8, and put a priority on displaced tenants at the top of these waiting lists, because they're like 18 months to 5 years long. So where are we going to put people is the question. And so I really want us to think about that and to come up with something innovative and creative, and I know we can do that. And
Thank you very much. Well said. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Board of Commissioners. My name is Tyler Morris. I'm a landlord here in Portland. I just wanted to give one quick example of how I've used the notice of non-renewal to a tenant. Just one of the multiple problems that we've kind of come across would be, one thing was pest control. I've had an apartment that has had confirmed roaches and other issues that starts to affect other tenants in that building. We have obviously things in place to pest control companies to come by and treat those apartments. They have a list of instructions that they'll leave for the resident. They'll tend to follow those things, but maybe not. We'll do inspections to confirm those ideas, but or confirm whether they're following those things along. But I would just say that we have issued a non-renewal in that instance, which I'd say helped us in order to fix a problem that was occurring that would then prevent it from disrupting other tenants, for that matter. I wanted to voice my opinion on that notice for non-renewal, and that I do feel like that is something that can be utilized as a tool to help the greater renter population.
And thank you both. Thanks very much. So, Carl, how many people do we have remaining in the sign-up sheet?
No, 28, 30, maybe.
Okay. And how many, just show of hands, folks that are still planning to testify? Okay, it looks like a little less than 28, so I think we might make it. So, again, try to be brief as you can, and let's call the next three, please.
Our Mitchell White, Francis Campy, and the last name might be Kerr or Carr on Southeast 80th.
Okay, looks like you got one of those folks. Let's keep going then into the list.
With Gail. I'm sorry, let's stick with this list. Mr. Lightning.
He's here. Keep going.
And Kim Pu, K-I-M-P-U is the name.
Okay, keep going.
Ken Summer, K-H-E-N, Summer, S-U-M-R, I believe it is.
Okay.
What about Gail Williams?
Okay, got her. One more, please.
Colette White.
Come on up, Ms. Williams. Okay, let's take those two, and then we'll see who's left.
Carolyn Anderson.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. Commissioner Salzman, I definitely agree on any extended time, rent increases, no-cause evictions. Again, we have to follow the landlord-tenant laws. Some of those may be challenged, but you're setting reasonable time frame, so I do agree with you on that in the amendments that were proposed. One of the issues I have is Mr. Stoll was a very interesting speaker, and one of the things that I got from his speech was that he stated that there could be a concern of overbuilding the housing inventory, comparing it to the office from the 1980s. Now, when he made that statement, that I'd like a little more research on exactly where he thinks the balance is to where we don't have 2,000 to 3,000 homeless people out on the streets, and where he thinks it would be considered being overbuilt, because in my opinion, we have a housing shortage. In my opinion, at 2 to 3% vacancy rate, we need more housing units built. And I don't think anyone in this room is worrying about overbuilding the housing market and saying we have 300 to 500 units over in this location that are empty. Let's see what we can do with those units. So I'm very interested to understand what he means by overbuilding the housing market in the city of Portland and where he feels that if we currently have at this time around 275 housing units out there, and we have a population base of 600,000, and we use a family of two units per unit, what number do we have to have as far as housing units to balance that out with the current population? So I'm curious for him to have a discussion with Commissioner Salzman on that issue, and let's look at some of those numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Gail Williams. I'm from Gresham, who Portland is coming to visit, which we've heard. My rent, I just got a notice on the 30th that it will be increasing at the end of my 13-month lease, effective January. Minimum rent is going up over 200, well, it will be like $270 a month, which is basically three extra months' rent this next year. However, I only have 2 weeks to take that option. Then I'm given another option at a higher price. If I still don't sign, it's on a month by month, and who knows what it could go up to. So it's just, we don't know where to go. We don't have any extra places around Gresham for one bedrooms. The article that was in Willamette Week that listed the, from just last week, listed the percentage, I will be paying more, 17%, and that's higher than this article that's about for a two-bedroom. I just hate to see people that I've talked to recently who have been in Gresham, Portland. We all love this place or we wouldn't be here. But I hate to see people saying we're going to have to move because we don't know where to go. People that are planning on retiring here. I would love to stay here forever. So please help us.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Carolyn.
There's a little button on the bottom of that. Just push the button there at the very on the base until it lights up. There you go. You got it.
Hello?
Yes.
My name is Carolyn, and I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to have us here to speak to you today. I've been trying to get through to you for several times. I've called to try to make appointments, and so... I'll try to do the best I can. I'm a little nervous about speaking in public. I am, obviously I'm black and I do have a disability and I am low income. I've lived in Portland for almost 15 years. It's about 15 years and the process or more. I was here when the process of gentrification first started in Northeast Portland and you know, when this issue hit the black community, there wasn't too much concern about it until it started hitting the dominant minority community. But that's not my point. The point is, as a disabled person and being on low income, the situation is very complex because there are laws that prevent people who receive SSDI from having a certain amount of money to even make to be able to live in an apartment. That is Section 8. That is considered affordable housing. Then once you have a certain amount of income, you pay that toward the housing, then that forces another problem on the system. You have to go and try to get max out as much as food stamps as you can. And then if you're living, then you got the food stamps, and then you have the issue with the housing. Then there are other laws that says, well, you can't have any money in the bank. A certain amount of money in the bank, because if you have that, then that's going to affect your health insurance. So then we'll cut your benefits here and then add here and take away there. And that's where many of us stand, and that's why we're not going anywhere, and that's why I'm here today to try to help. I want an appointment to try to help explain this to you so you can understand you're making decisions that affect us.
Mm. Thank you.
And so you need to hear the voices of us. We've heard you. We've seen the decisions you've made, and it's not blame, but it's without our voices. Does that make sense?
It does, and thank you so much for bringing those thoughts here to us.
Thank you. So thank you. I hope that I can call and get an appointment, and I can help you help us, and we can work together.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, we have some more folks left.
Yeah, the next three, the last name is Leanne, L-I-A-N, and then Cecilia Kem, K-E-M, I believe it is. Joel Spector. If I call your name, come on up. And then we're going with June Johnson.
That's not a seat behind Carla.
Cindy Robert.
Please.
Or Margaret Black. Come on up.
Okay, come on up. Welcome. Please, go ahead.
Thank you. I've been working with a fair number of...
Excuse me,
Joel Spector.
Thanks, Joel.
Yes. I work with a large number of the nonprofits in town. Relevant to this, I'm working with Community Alliance of Tenants, Right to the City, 350pdx.org, SolarCon, Jobs with Justice, Healthcare for All Oregon, 15 now. I'll stop the list there. It goes on. I think it's obvious to all of us, and I think someone, although I forget who, had noted that there are a large number of problems that are affecting us and that they're all interrelated and that many of them go on the national level or the state level as well as the local level. But, Mr. Mayor, as you had pointed out in your meeting with the Pope, this is the level at which we can actually get things done. I think that we have a real need for a more unified approach to approach the overall issue of throwing people under the bus. No slur on TriMet there. They do wonderfully. The rental packages that have been proposed are really just Band-Aids, but we really need Band-Aids to stop the bleeding. I think Justin Bury spoke to the specifics of that. I'm not going to get into that. I had the great fortune to be talking with Stephen Kuntz of the Sustainability Office yesterday at a meeting he was addressing. And I want to follow his example. I'll prepare a more detailed proposal and send it to you in email. I think we have ways that we can approach this problem, and it involves breaking out of the rather small scale of thinking that we've been doing here. Right now, when you're trying to get feedback, I'm not going to toss that out. We have too much.
No, thank you. We are looking for ideas, so we want you to keep them coming.
I don't think you know what you just asked for.
I'll take the chance.
Okay, you'll find out.
Okay. So wrap up if you can.
Yes,
please.
Well, I'll stop then.
Okay. No, do keep them coming. Actually, I wanted to mention that earlier, that you've heard from Commissioner Saltzman and others here, you know, some specific things we want to do with the state of emergency and also the renter protections. But we're also trying to get the community to come forward with ideas that during this state of emergency, we don't think we've got it all figured out at the front end, but we know that we've highlighted the problem. So
Mayor, let's just acknowledge that a good number of the most significant proposals that are before us were proposed by the community.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And between the declaration of an intent to declare an emergency and the community helping us define what the response should be, we've moved very far very quickly. And I take my hat off to advocates and community members who have been with a unified voice demanding that we act.
So don't stop. Thank you.
I won't.
Okay. Thank Welcome. You. Please.
Hello, my name is June Johnson, and the reason why I'm here is because my rent has gone up $350, so therefore my rent will be $1,145. I'm a senior, I'm 60 years of age. I'm disabled. I worked over 25 years with Multnomah County. But I found affordable housing. I put my $50 deposit down. It's on North Williams. They have 75 apartments. 15 are affordable housing. The regular rent starts at $2,000. For the two-bedroom, it will be $993. That's for the 60%, but if it was 50%, it would be $827. So with my income, I'm over $1,600, but I am short $452. So therefore, I need a cosigner. The apartment I've been there 2 years, and before that, by the Lloyd Center, I was there for 15 years. I have an excellent housing, never been evicted. Or anything, and I don't have a criminal record. So now I need a cosigner. This cosigner needs to make $4,965 a month. And I am having one hell of a time trying to find a cosigner. And I don't think that's fair. You know, like I said, not a criminal, don't have, you know, no background, no drugs or no anything. You know, I'm a missionary. I go to church. I do volunteer work. I mentor. I go into the prisons. I do my work and this and that. And I'm lost. I'm stuck because they found a loophole to not accept me because of this cosigner. So, okay, what do I do now? Because I don't have a cosigner that makes almost $5,000 a month. But this is affordable housing that I'm applying for. Okay, so tell me, what can you do?
Well, there's some people in this room that I think can probably help you soon, I hope. But you certainly highlighted the problem. Thank you. And again, there's some people here. I see them in the room that might want to talk with you before you leave.
I talk to a lot of people. I've been to Salem three times the last year and a half, and I helped them with $2 million one time and almost $100 million one year. And I done made all this money, I advocated, and now I have nothing to show for. And so that's what I'm saying. These contractors, yes, they're coming back over to North and Northeast. They want the minorities to come back, but they don't want us to live there. They're shutting us out. They're actually locking us out. So we really do need help. Please, whatever you can do, commissioners, please work on this. This is the last foot to get in the door, what I'm trying to say. Seriously, I'm begging you to please help us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the Rental Housing Alliance of Oregon. We have about 1,900 members, 81% of whom own 10 units or less, so your mom and pop folks. You know, it's really hard for me to say after the stories you've heard because they're tragic, and it breaks my heart. But for the most part, the crisis that you're talking about in this ordinance is trying to address is not a landlord versus tenant issue. It's a rental market supply versus demand issue.
Nurse folks, let her speak. Go ahead.
Wow. Changing the rules on landlords does not lead to more housing. The same number of people will be in need of units. While you assume that more people will be able to stay put with this ordinance, you will see that unhappy neighbors will actually be leaving. The main reason landlords terminate tenants is not because they want more money, it's because they want more peace. Small landlords don't want to evict anyone, but sometimes it happens for the good of the community. The current Oregon law is 30 days, which to neighbors of bad actors seems like an eternity, those 30 days. Other tenants have the right to a safe community, and they should not have to wait 90 days to have one. The bad tenants will force the good ones to move out, leading to the exact displacement that your ordinance is trying to fix. Fact, for most landlords, it is not about aimlessly terminating tenants. It's about protecting residents. Please look at the requirements on landlords, what government has added to their obligations in the last 4 years. What other private business has as much regulation? What do they get in return for it? Property tax breaks? No. Low-cost loans? No. Income tax breaks? No. Business license credits? No. They pay taxes, they pay employees, they pay local fees, and they meet business, tenant, screening, zoning, and housing requirements. Landlords provide a service for the people of this city. And there's good landlords, and they are all treated like pariahs. Another fact, if you want more of something, you remove barriers. If you want less, you put up barriers. The actions in this ordinance will not change the vacancy problem, but you do have the power to do that. And you were doing that by bringing down barriers to building more affordable housing. And we applaud you and want to help you with that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Can I, just before we lose you, since you represent a trade association, does the RLA believe the council has the legal authority to regulate in this area?
Mr. Commissioner, my association has not taken up that issue. And our...
We're hearing from others that a lawsuit is imminent. Do you believe we have the... You don't have a position today as to whether we have the legal right to regulate?
Sir, my comments are mostly directed at the termination notice, not at the increase in rent notice. I think that you probably have cause to do that.
And let me just say, if your industry believes that in taking up common sense renter protections, we're implying that landlords collectively are pariahs, I regret if that's the message, because I have not heard that. In this debate, I think we're struggling to find some balance. And my guess is that the approaches that other cities have taken, like San Francisco, would cause even more concern to your industry. We're trying to find a balance, and we have an emergency, and we have people looking at significant rent increases that they can't cover. And so I just want you to know, I have not heard anything in this discussion that singles out the landlords as pariahs. We are trying to exercise our duty to regulate in an area where there's an emergency, and we're hoping to find the balance. And frankly, up until this point, I have found the relationship with the landlord community very productive. And a lot of the things we've done in the last few years, we would not have done without the full participation and cooperation of the landlord community, including Section 8 reform, including fair housing reform, and a lot of other and the efforts to police substandard housing. I mean, the community has been a full partner, so I regret that there's a sense that they're now quote-unquote pariahs because we're talking about some common sense renter protections.
Yeah, Commissioner Fish, I appreciate that, and I think that you'll find that my organization has been at the table on the Section 8, on the affordable housing issues. We've been there, we've talked about it, and we want to help. We really do, but I think you probably see in this room the actual evidence of what I'm talking about pariahs. There's lots of stories about bad actors. God, I know they're out there, and I wish I could find them so that I could go and take care of them. There's bad actors, yes, but for the most part, we're good people. And when we talk about the basic needs that you have to pay in your monthly paycheck, we're talking about housing, food, clothing, and transportation. And housing is the one area where it seems like It's an us versus them, and we don't want it that way. This, like I said in the beginning, this is not a landlord versus tenant issue. This is a supply versus demand issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
Are Marion Haynes, Nathan Starr, and Barry Jo Stull.
Okay.
Are you earlier? Oh, I'm sorry. We'll go with Margo Black.
Mr. Stull's
first.
Not here, so yep. Why don't you come
Black
on up?
Will go.
Oh, is he coming down?
I should have called her earlier.
All right. Why don't you come on up? We'll take him next if he's coming down from upstairs. We'll get to
we
it.
We do have some seats downstairs if anybody wants, down, is folks, planning to testify and so. Wants to come on down.
Okay, Marion, I think you're first.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the council. My name is Marion Haynes, and I represent the Portland Business Alliance. I'm here to speak just on the declaration of emergency ordinance before you and to say that we very much appreciate this ordinance coming forward. As you know, for some time we've been saying we have a crisis on our streets and in our parks with the homeless population, and so the increased focus and urgency to act that this brings we think is a very, very good thing. As you know, we started a petition asking for some additional focus on increased shelter space, services for those who want and need them, and also for enforcement for some of the illegal activities that are occurring out there. A lot of times these behaviors are really preying on those most vulnerable that are on our streets. So we've had at this point about 3,300 community members sign on to that. Their mothers, fathers, you know, citizens, some actual homeless people that have signed on in support of that. So we think this is a good first step. We know that it's a complicated issue and there's a lot to come, but we applaud the focus and we're ready to continue the conversation and be a part of the solution. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
Good afternoon, councilors. My name is Margo Black. I think I've emailed you guys a few times. I'm 36. I'm a married mother of three. My husband and I both have advanced degrees in mathematics and are professionally employed in careers relating to that. Together, we make at or above median income, just barely above. We were hoping to buy a house in Portland when we moved back here after graduate school, but essentially weak tenant protections has wiped out our savings and our ability to save. As a tenant, I've received two no-cause evictions. I want to disabuse you of the notion that no-cause evictions are only issued for problem tenants. My first no-cause eviction was in 1998. I was a young single mom. I was recently orphaned. And my landlords believed that the coworker who was bringing me home after work was my boyfriend and didn't approve, and they gave me a no-cause eviction. I only found out when I sort of pressed them for the reason why, and I won't even repeat what they said, but I assure you that I was not in a position to have deserved that. I was a rent-paying good citizen. And I had to move 10 miles away from my apartment, and I ended up losing my job because of that, because I couldn't get to work reliably on time. And it was a really devastating experience. My next no-cause eviction was an owner move-in, which is sort of hard to say that they shouldn't be able to do that. But I just want to really quickly address, because I've heard so many people bring up this problem tenant issue, that no-cause evictions, they may be being used to raise rent, but I also want to point out that they don't need to issue a no-cause eviction to raise rent. We can just raise rents. And then if tenants can't pay them, they're faced with economic evictions. I think that if the 30-14 isn't working, then we need to address that issue rather than allow no-cause evictions to be used for retaliatory and discriminatory purposes. I mean, if those problem tenants are in a lease, the only option would be a 30-14. So I don't understand why the landlords feel like they have to retain this ability to issue those in other situations.
Wrap up soon.
Okay.
Sorry.
As I said, I'm a numbers person. Today I spent some time looking at how much it costs to move. I live in a three-bedroom apartment, a 43-year-old apartment complex. I don't have a washer and dryer. I'll remind you that I have three children. I live 3 miles away from work, half a mile away from my kids' school. I searched Craigslist today for apartments that were less than or equal to my current rent, which is already 9% above HUD's FMR and 12% above the average rent listed in Portland Housing Bureau's State of Housing for my neighborhood. I found 15 listings in Multnomah County, three in Portland. Portland and two in Portland Public School District that are at or below my current rent. My commute to work right now is 11 minutes. It would go up to 45 minutes each way, same for my husband. I'd pay $60 less in rent, but $460 more in transportation and childcare associated costs with that additional transport time. And then there are the moving expenses. The deposit and application fees would be $2,050. Assuming that my 90-day notice is timed to coincide with my lease ending and I find replacement housing quickly.
I need you to stop. It is important. I wish you, if you could give that.
I have emailed it to you before, and I would like it to be on the record.
Okay, try to finish soon.
Assuming that I find replacement housing quickly, then I either need to pay $3,625 in double rent or a $2,265 lease break fee and $725 in double rent, which comes to $2,990. And then there are the moving expenses, the truck, the boxes, the time to pack, load, unpack, and clean. My husband is an hourly employee who bills for his hours. All of that comes to $1,915. Altogether, this comes to almost $7,000, which is $600 a month. If we assume I have to do this every year that I get, because we can issue these no-cause evictions at the end of every tenancy, that becomes untenable. And essentially, it means that families like mine will have to leave Portland in order to survive. And if a family like mine, I'm white and I make median income, I'm stably employed and I don't have any barriers, if I have to leave Portland because I can't afford to rent here, then what about everybody else?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well done. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. This is the first time I've ever done any public speaking, but I'll do my best.
Just give us your name
and
proceed.
My name is Nathan Starr.
Thank you, Nathan.
And thank you very much, Commissioners and Mayor. Am I coming in loud and clear, or is there a buzz?
Yeah, you're fine. Either mic works.
All right. I'll wrap this up in a quick nutshell here. I'm a gentleman who's 40 years old, and on my 25th birthday, I got run over by a 14-ton forklift by my co-worker twice in less than 10 seconds. I've had 19 surgeries and spent over 70 days at OHSU. I have a 15-year-old autistic child that I've had primary custody for since he was born. Recently, my son and I were given a no-cause eviction for retaliatory major tactics, I believe, but nonetheless, I'm paying $1,075 for my three-bedroom apartment, and the people below me are paying $500 more. They just moved in a few months ago. I had this ready for you. I wanted to read this for you, if you don't mind. It'll keep it on point. So I said, I've recently been given a no-cause eviction notice, despite the fact that there are no complaints on record and rent has always been paid. My son and I have lived here for over 5 years, and I was not given the option to release. I have submitted an application for low-income housing through the Clackamas County Housing Authority, but my son and I need emergency housing while we wait for this housing to become available. My son and I are to be moved out no later than November 8, 2015. As a result of this no-cause eviction, and because I have no savings at all for myself and my 15-year-old son, of whom I have primary custody, I'm asking for financial help in order to pay movers to move my son and me. I believe the property management company is utilizing retaliatory tactics in order to evict my son and I because I informed them of serious safety concerns and code violations and incidences of illegal entry by workers hired by the management company. Losing one's home, regardless of its problems, is especially unsettling for a youth of whom a home and neighborhood have been so central to his security. And his particular disability requires a settled situation as soon as possible. Though an adult, I continue to be impacted by multiple hardships and issues from my injuries and congenital disabilities. My son and I would greatly appreciate the assistance of all of you to make the best candid and honest and forthright, conscientious decision possible for us Oregonians out there who are getting displaced for no reason whatsoever. The fact that my son and myself's lives have been uprooted for months now. We just finished with court and somewhat of a victory. I'm not allowed to explain it right now. But nonetheless, nobody should have to be forced with these no-cause evictions. Do you know if one person is owed $1 to an apartment company, they're not allowed to take retaliatory actions? If $1. And to be given no-cause evictions without having to be told why is also unconscionable and inhumane. And I'm wondering why the one-year moratorium Mr. Saltzman, would be something to debate when 1 year is the conscionable, humane thing to do at this given time, not only in Multnomah County, but on all of Oregon, all of Oregonians.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well said. Appreciate it. Okay. Okay, we can do that. Yes. All right. Questions for these folks? Thank you all very much. Thank you. Okay, who do we have still signed up?
Next would be Barry Jo Stoll, Edith Zadunich, and Miranda Milligan.
Okay, come on up, please. All right, let's take these two folks, and then we'll call some more. Mr. Stoll, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Barry Jo Stoll. As we sit here, your partner and your partner and your partner and your partner and Commissioner Fish, your partner, my former landlord, PCRI, has been keeping the entire 5-apartment complex at 4066 Northeast Grand Avenue vacant for 4 years. An affordable housing landlord provider. Now, when I spoke with this, the last time I had a candid conversation with Commissioner Fish, it was last Halloween. I said, they're keeping the 5-plex vacant. He said, that's crazy. Yes. When Chief O'Day was sitting over here and I said, go get him, Tiger, that was just, everybody knows it's organized crime. So I'm going to tell you who you're dealing with. My sister researched, found out she's eligible for the Daughters of the American Revolution. I'm eligible for the Sons of the American Revolution. Turns out my folks, after we kicked England out in the Revolutionary War, they were building a house. Had to take a break. Fight the War of 1812. Won that, went back and finished the house. 200 years later, that house is still standing. Now, PCRI filed a 30-day no-cause eviction against an express statutory prohibition. Wasn't legal for them to take that 30-day no-cause to court because my rent was paid, and you can't file the 30-day no-cause when the rent was paid. That's ORS 105.120. My Supreme Court case, Stoll versus Hoke, defines the act of filing a case. How much work could I possibly do? Go to the Supreme Court? Find out what the landlord's not allowed to do? What's the landlord destroy 20 grand of my property in 2006? Last week, I applied for a claim for $4,775, which was what PCRI cut me a check for in 2010. What about the $250,000 under the Landlord-Tenant Act that I had coming? You folks have done nothing but cause this problem. Maybe you should go to the auto parts store where they say poor planning on your part does not make an emergency on our part. Now, none of you has the backbone to go out here and get on the number 6 bus and go up to Mason Street on MLK and go one block and see that 5-plex that's been vacant for over $100,000 of affordable housing rent. You can't find landlords to take your Section 8 vouchers. How about the landlord you're partnering with right now? The landlord that you're funding right now with your Portland Development Commission, the one that has an executive director reserve parking space and cares more about that than, as you do, than getting people into the affordable housing stock that we currently have. You have no emergency. You have no backbone. That's your emergency.
Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Edith Zadunich. In the last half year or so, me and my partner both faced no-cause evictions. Neither of us had ever been evicted before. I just find that interesting that we both went through that around the same time. And for him, it was because the apartment was being sold to someone else, the whole property. And then for me, it was because the real estate was selling it, the house that I was in, to somewhere else. And we were both just renting rooms. That's all we can afford. We're both pretty educated. I have a master's degree in liberal studies from Reed College. I work as a freelance editor, and I try to supplement that with the various temp jobs I'm able to find, which are often very menial and really, I think, beneath what I could do to fulfill myself in the community. And it's just not enough, really, to make ends meet, and this was a huge hardship to have to move. But to add to that, when you're living as a roommate in a place, there's often extra burden. So when I moved in, I was told I was signing a 1-year lease. And then I signed a lease, and then my roommate got a form and didn't tell me about it and signed us on as month to month, like around that time. And then I was really shocked when we got the notice of cause eviction. And then this housemate who lived there longer decided that she was going to move out a month earlier. And we actually got the thing in the mail, a few days late. So I really had about 3 weeks to try to find a different place to live. And I was forced into a kind of a dangerous area in Northeast Portland where I felt unsafe getting in and out. Yeah, so that was my time. I just wanted to give an idea of what some other people are going through here in town, people who rent rooms.
Thank you.
I also haven't gotten my deposit back. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, can I just make one comment?
Please.
Under the first, not about you, ma'am, sorry.
Okay.
Under the First Amendment, we welcome people to come before us and to have their say. And it is our tradition to respectfully engage and listen to people. And if they say something we disagree with, we still give them the privilege of speaking. But we do have an individual comes before us on a regular basis making outrageous claims about a nonprofit partner of the city, which just so happens to be a nonprofit partner that serves a historically African-American community in Inner Northeast and that has been in the front lines of dealing with gentrification, displacement, and other issues. And I hope that no one who is watching this or in the audience takes our tradition of allowing someone to exercise a First Amendment right as being somehow a tacit support or acknowledgement of some of the underlying claims. And at least one person who regrettably in his comments makes outrageous claims, which in any other setting would be called defamatory. But in this forum, he is given the privilege of speaking. I just want people to understand that when we receive that information, this council is not ratifying or supporting his view. We are just giving him the privilege of stating his opinion.
Thank you. Next, please.
Are Michael Colvin, Autumn Arms, and Thomas Edwin Mullen.
Okay. Got one of those three. Let's call some more.
Mr. Mullins is here. And next we'll go with Melissa. Oh, no, she already went. Katrina Holland. Okay. She here, Katrina?
Yes, she is. Okay, welcome. Good afternoon. Go ahead, if you'd like.
Hi, I'm Autumn Arms, and I just want to briefly state, some people have kind of said what I was going to say, but I'm on Social Security disability. I have an aneurysm in my heart, and I have a team of cardiologists and surgeons, you know, at my beck and call at Emmanuel, and recently, I had to move into an apartment from my home that was sold. And in the year that I've lived there, the rent has gone from $895 to $1,295. And right now I'm safe because I have a lease. I have Section 8 voucher, and I have a lease.
It just does that. Keep going.
Okay. What's going to happen to me, because I really need to stay in Portland for my medical issues, and there's no place. Section 8 allows, in my zip code, 1,050 for a two-bedroom, and they're going up to 1,295, so they're going way above the allowance. That's going to leave me in a very unsafe position, and as you've heard many times, the waiting list for affordable housing is too long, plus my income. If like that one woman stated, if you need a co-signer, my income is not going to get me into the affordable housing. So although all these amendments are out there, they're great, the 90 days, I agree with all of that. We really need to start looking at some kind of rent control. They're raising it 40%. That's just too much. That's too much for anybody here to handle, even the people who are coming in who are educated with good jobs. And that's all I have to say.
And ma'am,
Thank you.
So we're clear,
thank you very much.
Under state law, we are not even allowed to have the discussion about rent control, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, the right solution or not. Just understand that under state law, City of Portland cannot even entertain that subject matter.
Okay.
So, thank you. Just so you know, it's not.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good to see you all. Thank you for the opportunity. I just
put your name really, record, Katrina.
Yeah, that's right. My name is Katrina Holland. I'm Deputy Director at Community Alliance of Tenants, and I am here today to speak specifically for the anonymous tenants who did not feel comfortable sharing their stories because of the vulnerability that imposes when potentially with the consequence of either losing their home and or impeding on their ability to look for housing. So really quickly, I just wanted to show for everybody in here, within the last 2 months, these are the number of hotline calls that we have received of people who have received rent hikes that they can't afford and or no-cause evictions. This is just in 2 months. It really is an emergency and something needs to happen. I personally agree with the 120 days, but hopefully you will make that amendment. So I'm just going to start reading. Tenant number one, 15 to 20 minutes after repair of hot water not working for a month, I received a no-cause eviction. Tenant number two, my rent has gone up 3 times in 18 months, 5% each time. Tenant number three, I moved in on the 6th of July. On the 31st of July, I received an envelope in the mail, a no-cause termination to our rental agreement. Tenant number four, I was paying $810 per month, and I was told today that my rent as of October 10th will be increased to $1,650. I am displaced. Tenant number five, I cannot afford medications, food, and necessities. Tenant number six, my working teens are nevertheless concerned that the household rent cannot afford them the time off to work or the time off work to attend school. Tenant number seven, I haven't left because I can only afford to pay my rent. I can't save up for deposits or moving costs. Tenant number eight, my rent is now so high that I'm having to make cuts to my food budget. Tenant number nine, I received a letter from our property manager stating that we had 90 days to vacate our apartment. Everyone in the 18-unit complex got a similar notice. Tenant number 10, we have always paid a rent on time and never caused trouble. Because they evicted us, our children have to move schools. Tenant number 12, my rent has gone up 15% this year. If I had a car, I would be living in it, despite the fact that I work 2 jobs, often 6 days a week. Tenant number 13, let's not forget the financial stress of displacement. I was billed $2,200 for cleaning and repairs. We received a 60-day no-cause eviction because the property was being sold.
We should wrap up in a minute.
So. Sure, this is the last one. Tenant number 15, I've been there for 8 years. My landlord says loyalty means nothing. This is stressing me out, and I feel like I'm a no-cause eviction waiting to happen. They don't care if they have a new tenant every month as long as they get higher rent. Please pass this ordinance at 120 days.
Thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Yes, my name is Thomas Mullen, and I've came here several times over the last 20 years to address the homelessness in the north and northeast. And at that time, I came here to city council back in 1986, I believe, and therefore they gave me some property over on Beach Street that we would have turned into a homeless shelter. As they said, the homeless in the black has raised 44% this year alone, because now they're quit couch surfing and fighting amongst themselves. They're starting to come out and let the city know that there has been homelessness. Now they want the city to address their homelessness, because they see the city is really taking their land from their mothers and their fathers, their uncles, and everything. So therefore, they can't hide from couch searching anymore, because everybody's losing their couches in their houses. And so, therefore, we need to address this problem. We need to take it to our superiors. And that right now is Barack Obama is our president. And also, this problem also goes all the way to Rome, our Pope, because it is involved with the churches versus state. And I brought 23 pages that I would like for you to fact to them and let them know as the superiors to address this problem. And it is quoted within our statutes of the states. If you turn your flag upside down, or if someone taking your land, or you and believe that you're in bodily harm, that the president must send in the federal government. And I am doing this right now, and I want everyone in the state of Oregon to join me in this call until we do get Mr. Obama here to address this problem, because the problem is United statewide. He's already put it on a national level crisis. So therefore, we must address it and bring it to him where he can do where your office stopped, where he can take over. So please make sure that Mr. Obama and Pope Francis get these papers, and where we can take the discussion on further at the proper time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So,
and I will be leaving these papers with your office.
Yeah, just leave that with Carla. Thank you so much. So I think because we may be losing a quorum in a little bit, we ought to go ahead and proceed to take a vote on the declaration of emergency. I know. Hang on a second. On the declaration. Hang on. I'm going to give you a chance. on the declaration of emergency, and then I think we may have to carry some testimony on the renter protection issues over until next week, because we're not actually going to vote on that until next week. So if there are folks that are still here who want to speak on the declaration of emergency itself, come on up, and let's take that testimony and then give the council a chance to act on the declaration, and then again we'll go back to the renter protection issues for the remaining time that we have a quorum today and next week as well. So good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Jackson. I'm a Quinault Indian. I chaired Quinault Housing Authority since 1970 when we first got